Join listeners like you in helping to ensure that the independent voice of KPFT will be preserved for generations to come. Name KPFT as a beneficiary in your will today. This is KPFT Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Another edition of Technology Bites.
Well, good morning, campers. So I guess Flicted is running late, so Groovehouse is running the board, which means we don't have the equipment to connect Peter Hughes.
Oh, you're right.
So
I hear Flicted, though. I hear him rumbling up.
Do you?
Oh, I hear him, too.
I hate this microphone, by the way. It just doesn't want
to. Do you want to?
I want to just leave it like that.
Do you want to use the other one?
I could.
Yeah.
You know, I just threw it out the wooden window.
Yeah, I just, you know, I want to have a show with fewer technical difficulties. All right, so welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Barrett.
And he's...
Groovehouse.
Yeah. Mm. All right, so we're going to work on... we're going to work on all the things that we have to work on at the beginning of any given Technology Bites.
Everyone's just kind of getting here.
Well, I know Flicked is just getting off of his honeymoon, right? So, I mean, it was just, he's running late. He's here now, but I know he had DEF CON last week, and then he got married last week, and then he had a honeymoon this week. So, be curious to catch up with Flicked to see how his things went. You were at DEF CON last week.
Yes, and B-Sides. I went to B-Sides this year.
You went to B-Sides, which is after DEF CON?
Before DEF CON.
Oh, okay.
Which means you get in a few days earlier, which explains
my voice. So you went even earlier?
I went even earlier. Not as early as I meant to. I actually misbooked my airfare, and I had hotel and everything a day before I actually got into Vegas. So, oops. Then I tried to rebook it, and they charged me like $1,000. And I immediately online, and I immediately freaked out and got a hold of customer service and said, "Hey, I did not mean to do that. Can we please roll it back?" So, yeah, I didn't get in until Tuesday. B-side started Tuesday morning, so I missed the first morning.
But you didn't have two flights booked.
No.
You were able to correct your flight?
No, although I got an extra free flight on the way home.
Because you had a medical emergency.
Yeah, all I wanted to do was go home. And a few Houston people were on the flight with me, and we get to the airport an hour or two early, and we get up in the air. And then, you know, and that, actually, there were storms, and storms all over, actually. I guess you guys had some bad weather here in Houston. Jay Lee wasn't here. You were actually still out of the country.
I was still out of the country.
But apparently two planes left Vegas full of hackers. One had to sit down in Austin, and the other sat down in Love Field. Because of all the electrical storms. So we might have suffered the same fate had someone two rows behind me not had heart issues or some kind of medical emergency. So, you know, that thing you never want to hear. They go, is there a doctor or EMT on board? So we had an EMT, a cardiologist, and an OBGYN. So we kind of had the bases covered. And they didn't go to the cockpit, which means I didn't get a chance to fly the plane. But they went behind us and stabilized or got an IV. And, yeah, we did the fastest turnaround. We flew straight through the storms we had avoided. And then the pilot put it down on the runway really hard. We kind of bounced up on the landing gear. And then we did what felt like an 80-mile-per-hour taxi to where the ambulance was. So I guess they just clear the whole thing for that. Then we had to refuel and re-medical and re-everything and re-wait. And then finally we got into Houston, you know, midnight plus, who knows.
You always seem to have trouble getting out
of Vegas. I do. I've got, if I didn't, you know, I would think this was made up if I didn't have other Houstonians on the flight with me. The luck is just bad.
Well, we dodged a bullet because apparently they're having some really bad weather up in New York and up on the East Coast today. I mean, really bad. And that was stuff was coming in as we were flying out of New York yesterday to come back to Houston. And so we had absolutely perfect travel, everything from getting to Iceland to getting our luggage to all connecting flights to all reservations in 13 different hotels. Everything just went without a hitch.
You said you had sun.
And sunshine for most of the trip, which was, I went to Iceland for 2 weeks, and it was just, the weather could not have been better. It could have been a little better in a couple of places, but overall, it was just fantastic. So we were driving around out on gravel roads and remote locations, and the car didn't break down, and the weather was good.
Not eaten by a troll. I heard they come out in snowstorms, so that was good. You did troll hunting, though. You tracked down quite a few trolls.
We found a couple of trolls. We found a few trolls. I also found a magical elf fairy garden, which threatened to keep us there forever.
Icelandic Shangri-La.
It was. There was something going on there. We got shown this little valley on this tour that we took. They wouldn't take us up to the top of Mount Hekla because it's a volcano that goes off every 10 years, and it hasn't gone off for 14 years, and it's been trembling. So they didn't want to take us too close to that. So the tour guide was this really great guy who was a photographer for the Icelandic Tourism Bureau and, you know, knew his way around Iceland. He was German and has been traveling all around. He had this place that he wanted to show us, so he took us over there. When we drove up, it didn't look like anything. And then we got out of the car, out of the super Jeep, this giant truck with giant wheels, and went and walked up to the edge. And it literally was. It was like walking up to Shangri-La. There was just this. It looked like a planned garden. And it wasn't. It was all naturally occurring, like three or four waterfalls in there, little rivers, little creeks running through it. It was just.
Yeah, it looks like it doesn't actually exist. It looks like it's kind of been transplanted. You'll put stuff like that up on the Geek Radio site, maybe.
If you want to go to baldheretic.com, I've got it all. I've got all my photographs and tales of the adventure written out there. But it was fantastic. So we basically climbed down into this valley, and that's a little bridge that's probably about 2-3 foot long. So that gives you an idea of the scale. We're hopping all around in here, and I swear I didn't want to leave. It was like there was probably a door behind one of those waterfalls. Probably a secret door. I hear Peter Hughes on the line, so we got Peter Hughes connected now. Hello, Peter.
Hello.
So how did it go last week? I was not here for 2 weeks, and I know that it was a fundraiser, and I there was at least a moment where I felt a pang of guilt for not being here.
You shouldn't feel any guilt for not being here. I'll say, just sit for just one more second and savor how good your trip was.
Yeah, because I'm going to get some bad news.
Yeah, basically. I mean, we had the two nights of fun drive, and the first night we got the goal was $1,300, which is pretty low. And the first night we got almost to $1,000. If I remember right, and the second night we got to I think $675. So on the pledge drive we came out a little past half of our goal. We came up about between I think around $900 short of what our goals were.
Well, to that there was a pledge online on the web after the first show. We want to thank Rosalind Ferguson, who made a pledge via the web, and then we had another pledge came in after last week's show via the web from Todd, who made a pledge. He said, thanks for all the great shows. So that added another, you know, to the overall total, that added about another $155 to the...
Nice. So
it's a little helpful.
It helps, but the problem is, you know, being so far from the total.
Well,
and, you know, the thing that concerns me, and, you know, I posted about it on the website, I tweeted about it, and it's on our Facebook page, is, you know, the goal was a number that covers Technology Bytes time on the air. You know what I mean? It wasn't like we were – this wasn't a goal for us to carry other programs. And it feels wrong that we aren't – that we don't have enough listeners or enough support to cover the airtime that the station gives us.
Yeah, that is a bit of a concern. And I think, you know, unfortunately, I think that's been something that's kind of been brewing for a while. I was looking at the numbers on some of the previous fund drives, and even the times that we've made our goals, if we look at the actual fulfillment on some of those, they were very, you know, a lot of people that might have, you know, that had pledged maybe with good intentions didn't follow through. So we've actually fallen short on times that we thought that we had made a pretty strong showing. So that's also somewhat discouraging. I will say this. I was listening to the show from last week when y'all started off, you know, the fundraiser for the second show. I was listening to the podcast of that, or to the – you can download it from KPFT archive site. And I kind of like – you know, I know it was a risk that you took, you know, that you took when you did it the way you did it, by having, you know, going ahead and doing kind of a news program and had Lee Hutchison and Dwight Silverman talking about different stories as y'all went through, and then kind of opening up the phones and then going back to talking about different tech stories. And I thought the format was really good. I think that maybe that's something we could build on if we wanted to continue doing things the way we're, you know, trying to find ways to improve what we're doing here. It sounded great. It sounded very informative, and I do think there's a lot to be said for having some real strong personalities in the studio. When you were present, and having Dwight and Lee there were very enthusiastic and chiming in, and it sounded good. And then I fast forwarded to the end to see what happened. I was like, well, this didn't go very well, but it sounded good to me. I was like, I would have pledged to that, you know. But yeah, that's unfortunate that you know, we do these fundraisers. I know they seem to come pretty quick and frequently, and they're not the most fun thing in the world to do. But it is discouraging when you think about what it takes to run this radio station and keep it on the air. And we do get a measure of feedback from the fundraisers when we ask our listeners to turn around and contribute money to the radio station to keep it going.
The other piece you might not be aware of, if you didn't listen to the prior show, because we had Ernesto was on, the CPB, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, you know, it used to be that we said most of our money came from our listeners. Well, now it's basically all of it. The feds aren't giving money to public radio, or at least not to KPFT kind of stations. And so there's apparently about $200,000 that they expected that is apparently never going to come. And that's why they had to have – it was an early drive, which I don't think helped us. I think a lot of people that might have been listening or might have normally been listening and might have normally been there to pledge weren't there because they were on vacation.
Right.
And but the drive was the earliest they've had, because without that money coming from the federal government – then they weren't going to make it to time to have another drive. If they didn't have one then, they would have...
It was kind of an emergency drive to make up for some lost funding.
Yeah. Well,
it's tough to step it up on our side. Maybe we can, like, can we see a pyramid scheme on the air? Like, if everyone that listens, if they tell two friends, and then they tell two friends, and then they pledge, but the people on top don't have to pledge anymore, then it just builds and builds and builds.
We'll still take your pledge.
Yep.
You can still
get a here's one. If you pledged, then you don't have to pledge the next time, and one of you who didn't pledge needs to pledge. That's the new pyramid scheme. Now, one of you that's never pledged and listened for a long time, maybe think about it. Yeah, you can go. You know, one thing is, we can. You know, one of the ways we could make this up is there's the tip jar on KPFT.org, And you can put in a pledge there, and you can put in a note and say it's for Technology Bites. And that would probably change a lot of the perception of the show again if we can get back to – if we could reach our goal and fulfill it, I would think.
Maybe we should just have an ongoing fundraiser where we try to get at least two pledges per show before the fundraising episode.
Yeah, put it in the tip jar. I mean, you don't even have to.
Well, you know, I think it would take a little bit more coordination because right. If we get money in the tip jar between now and the next fund drive, then the people in charge of the fund drive don't necessarily count that. We'd have to like make arrangements with the station.
Oh, right.
To say that, you know, we've raised pre fund drive, we've raised this much money. And we want that counted to our total so that when we go into fund, you know, like when we did the one where we had everybody pledged before we even did the show.
Right.
So that was kind of, you know, that was cool, but we had to work that out with the station. So, you know, certainly some things to think about, you know, coming off of that fund drive. I don't want to sound too gloomy or too depressed about it. I think that the listeners of KPFT and the listeners of Technology Bites do give until it hurts, and we have a way of making it hurt, you know, more often. So I want to thank everybody who did pledge, and I understand that not everybody can make financial contributions to public radio, but it is something that's important, and it's something we need to consider in what we're doing and how we're doing it as to whether or not we're going to, you know, we warrant the pledges or warrant the financial support. We hope that we do, and we will use this as an opportunity to self-evaluate and assess what we're doing. So I want to get off that topic for now, and we're going to move on and do the regular show here. Now that we got the whole crew back in place, and we got Afflicted, how are you doing?
I'm okay.
Yeah? How's married life?
I don't really know yet.
You don't know yet?
No.
You just haven't had time to assess it, or has something been delayed?
No.
Or
I know I haven't had time to think about anything yet.
Yeah? Did you have a fun honeymoon?
Yeah, but it was really busy, and I was tired most of the time from moving and going places and going a lot of places.
How was DEF CON for you?
It was pretty good. I was a lot more tired this year than in previous DEF CONs. I slept a lot more than I used to.
Well, you've only been married for less than a week, and you're already.
Well, you went into it extremely tired. I mean,
didn't you have a big lot of work to do?
Yeah, we did the wedding ourselves, and so I got like 3 hours of sleep the night, two nights before the wedding, and then like 3 hours of sleep the night before the wedding, and I was pretty much up running around
working
those like 20 hours. The day before and the day of the wedding. Like, yeah, it was funny. So Heather said, oh, the wedding was like really awesome. It was really beautiful. It was so cool. Did you enjoy it? And I was like, no, not really. And she was like, why not? And I was like, I didn't even get to think about it because I was just running around trying to fix things and make things work and make sure everybody had the stuff they needed. And so the only time I really was like just not doing something was the actual ceremony, like where I walked up and stood there and waited for her, and then we said our vows. So that was cool, but both before and after that, all I was really doing most of the time was like running around trying to take care of stuff.
You probably should have had somebody do that.
Yeah.
Maybe next
wedding.
Maybe next time. Well, I did see that all of a sudden your wife is a lot more active on social media all of a sudden. She got herself a Twitter account.
I helped her set up a Twitter account.
And she's been posting a little bit to Facebook.
Was that in the vows? Was that part of the marriage?
You will be assimilated.
She had said that she had wanted to do that for a while. She just never had. So, and then like when we went on the wedding, we went on the honeymoon, she was like, oh, I really would like to post these to Facebook. And I was like, well, why don't you create a Twitter account and have it feed into your Facebook? So I helped her set up a Twitter account, and then she uses that, and it feeds into Facebook.
She wasted no time changing her name.
Nope.
On her Facebook.
Yeah, on Facebook. It legally takes
a little bit longer for the county.
Well, I'm glad it all worked out, at least what you can remember. You can tell it doesn't look.
Look
tired.
I'm still tired.
You look tired.
And I've got I still have a whole bunch of beer left over, so I'm going to
have
another party.
After party. Party.
Yeah.
Yeah, this one, get somebody else to handle the details so you can enjoy the beer and enjoy the party.
Yeah, that's so the wedding, right? I had no beer at all. I did have some of the fruity mixed drink. I think I drank one or two of those in a minute and a half because I was really thirsty, and then I decided it wasn't a good idea because I wasn't sure how much alcohol was in it. I had no desserts, no cupcakes, no pie, no nothing. And food, I got one or two slices of brisket and one sausage link before my plate was taken away because they were cleaning up.
Oh, no, that's not cool.
So I really didn't. So, but hopefully everybody else had a good time. I mean,
Dwight, I know I would have if
Dwight
I'd
said
there.
Something about the mosquitoes being kind of bad. I didn't notice.
Dwight was just trying to draw attention to his mosquito zapper. is what Dwight was trying to do. He had new tech out.
Because the thing is, the night before that day, I had spent 3 hours spraying the entire yard with this mosquito killer spray stuff.
Okay, I see one problem with Heather having more activity on social media. Is that your face is getting shown a lot more.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. I tried to block it, but then she's like, don't block this one. And then, of course, then that's the one she posts.
You lit one through. Floodgates are open.
Your life is changing in so many ways.
You're going to be the most downloaded man on the internet.
All right. Well, I'm glad that I there were a couple of points where I was thinking it would have been cool to be at DEF CON. I hear that they're going to move. They're moving.
Yes.
It.
So the crowds were insane. There were close to 20,000 or some numbers we heard. The line actually went. So the line was just incredible. It actually went all the way out to the pool. We KD5 got in line probably pre 7 o'clock, and even that took us a few hours.
I got there at 8:30. I think is when I got in line. No, it was around 8. When I got in line, between 8 and 8:30.
This is the line to pay.
The line to get for registration.
Right. And,
one single line.
And I guess I didn't know this because I didn't go all the way down there, but it went past where you register and looped all the way down to the tracks and then back.
Yes.
And I didn't know that. But when I got in line, it was the line went through that little three-way snake that it always has done, then went all the way back up the halls, past Penn and Teller, all the way to the casino. But they couldn't go into the casino area. I guess that was a rule for them. So they turned it around, and then it went down and went out the doors to the pool area. And when I got in line, they had just snaked it out the door and in. It was an extra 30
feet. See, this is large.
Feet.
This is a very
but
large
then,
casino.
But then when I walked it, I got around the corner, and when I got up down the hall to where I could see the windows to look out the pool to the right, they had changed the line, and it snaked all the way out to the end of the pools and back. And 3 hours later or so, when Barrett got mine and we got our press badges and everything, and we came back up and we walked, the line was still at the casino and still snaking out and everything.
These hallways are probably 100 yards per leg, and then it'll turn, and it's a hike. These aren't little hallways in high school. It's
my guess is it would be at least a half mile line. That was continually a half-mile line for at least 3 hours.
Three or four deep. So it wasn't a single organized British or German line. It was just people kind of closely jumbled together, being warm, kind of smelling,
and
not getting enough AC.
The lines for the tracks, in fact, and it's not because I was on my honeymoon.
Did you get my shirt?
We had BedCon.
I didn't get a shirt. It was insane.
Because you can watch it on closed-circuit TV.
Yeah.
And so, after the first day, I was like, I'm not going to go stand in that line to be told that it's already full. So I was like, let's just go back to the room. So we just actually just most of the time stayed in the room and watched all the tracks on TV, which was cool, except they didn't show the slides.
The slides.
So that was annoying sometimes because a person would be presenting and they'd say, oh, yeah, don't be like this. And everybody would start laughing, but you couldn't see. You had no idea what it was showing.
Oh. Well, that so they're going to move it to the Paris.
So yeah, that's
combo.
A weird thing. It's he's like, oh, pack your bags, and we're moving to Paris, but Paris has 140,000 square feet of convention area, and the Rio has 160,000, and that's less. And he's like, so we're also at Bally's, so it's actually going to be at Bally's and Paris.
Are they next to each other?
Yeah, we did.
We stayed a couple of days extra.
Yeah,
for more honeymoon that wasn't DEF CON. And we did some reconnaissance the next day after DEF CON was over. I think that's on Monday. And Bally's and Paris, you can walk between them.
What do you think is going to be the better option for staying? I mean, I know it's early.
I'm assuming Bally's will be cheaper. just because it looks older. Paris looks a lot newer and nicer.
And there are going to be like at least three or four other hotels.
I think
they're
he said
be
at
hosting.
Least six.
Yeah, six altogether.
That they're going to have DEF CON rates for that are nearby. So he said you could get a room somewhere in there for like $49.
What's
going to
be ground zero, do you think? Paris or Bally's?
It sounded like he was going to do both.
Yeah.
So I really don't know. I mean, he mentioned Paris first.
What's going to be the new iBar?
What needs to happen, I think, and this is what, you know, if anyone's interested in going to DEF CON next year, go ahead and hop on the DEF CON forums and let them know that it would be very nice if they could, you know, kind of like go with like a university or a college model where they might say like, okay, in Bally's, we're going to be doing wireless and, you know, that includes RFID and Wi-Fi and software-defined radio and all this other stuff. And then over here, like in this part, if you want to stay at the Paris, we're going to be doing like exploits and, you know, software-based stuff and this stuff. I don't want to all my stuff going on one side of campus and me living on the other side of campus.
It would be annoying to get a room in Bally's
and then have all
everything
stuff
you want to go to is in Paris.
So it'd be nice if they posted everything up front where everyone could kind of get a plan and know where they're going to be, you know, so you're not running across what would pretty much campus, hacker campus, you know, all day, every day.
Well, I don't want to, what were the badges, by the way? I'm sorry, Peter, we're going to get to that. I guess
the badges, so they were going to do a new propeller chip, but something happened in production about 3 or 4 months ago, and they could not pull off the new propeller chips. They rolled back to the same microcontroller that was on the badge a year or two ago, and Flicted has a couple of them. So it's a propeller microcontroller. It's got 8 cogs that you can program independently. There is, it's spelled out with DEF CON in, I guess, pads, and then each one of those are actually, I'm still using my voice from DEF CON.
I guess my batteries are dead.
Yeah. Also there's IR. IR was active. So there's something that says DEF CON. Each one of the little letters in DEF CON is a pad, so when you push those buttons, different lights will come up. So there's a strip of LEDs across the front, and then if you plug in a serial adapter to it and pull up a terminal on the computer, as you press different buttons, different things will show, and it'll say, like, for instance, like you're looking for, and I forget the names, that you're looking for Al. Al isn't here. And you hit something else that says, maybe you should call Ted. And it gives all these clues to the encryption kind of puzzle.
Do the badges talk to each other?
Yes, they do. So there is IR communications on the badges that was not in the source code that they distributed. So there was a lot of funky badge behavior, and I'm wondering if some of that wasn't due to the different badges communicating with IR. So one thing we're going to do is, if anyone is interested in going through like the whole badge challenge and the puzzle, KD5 and I and a few of the other Geek Gathering people that were at DEF CON, we're going to try and get a Google group together and definitely bring everything out to the Geek Gathering. Let everyone see everything. Let everyone see all the pictures and start cracking some of the crypto and some of the puzzles to get through it. And also just, you know, if people want to come see the badges and what you can do with the badges.
So you had no trouble getting the press badges?
We got in, no. It just took a few hours.
I guess
he hadn't
gotten a confirmation letter, but I guess they did have his name on the list.
Yeah, I was a little worried. But sure enough.
Well, sounds like good time was had.
Yeah, sorry about the t-shirt, but just like the lines. I mean, after dealing with that line, I just could not do it. Oh, and then by the time we did get up there, they were sold out of just about everything, you know, on the first day.
Right.
So I got a t-shirt that was thrown at me that you're welcome to have, but I think it's too tight for me. Oh, and I won a mustache competition.
Oh, yeah, tell us about that.
Yeah, so I didn't know that much about it, but I came in second in the 4th annual DEF CON beard and mustache competition.
You came in second?
Second place. There were a ton of entrants.
Did a bunch of people drop out this year?
No.
There's some seriously, I mean, nothing against
yours. No, let's take a time out now. There were different classes. So there is a mustache only, there is a partial beard, full beard, and then freestyle, which had like 4 entrants. They were all girls with, you know, like flowers or electric beards. The stiff comp, the other ones were a lot of stiff competitions. I think the full beard had the most with maybe like 40 applicants, but the field was pretty big, you know, it was large.
So your prize is value.
Yes. It's a repurposed, I guess it was a karate trophy given out mid-70s, it looks like.
It looked like your head on it.
A little bit, yeah.
It looked like somebody had taken the 3D printing and printed you out a trophy.
So I'm pretty happy with it. So next year I'm going to go for first, because I did not know that you're supposed to bribe the judges. That goes a long way, which I kind of found out afterwards. I gave them my mustache brush, and there were like 2 girl judges, and it didn't go very far. Everyone else brought alcohol and treats and stuff. So next year, if I still have the mustache next year, I will bring. Yeah, we'll probably will now.
Yes.
I've got an excuse.
There's been threats of shaving that thing for a long time.
Oh, it's never threats. It's maybe.
All right.
It'll only be regrets.
All right. Well, let's
news.
Let's do the news. If Peter Hughes has some news, so we'll go to the Technology Bytes San Antonio field office. And Peter, who did not go to DEF CON or Iceland, has stayed behind to get us caught up on all the Technology Bytes news. So take it away, Info Shot.
It's the Technology Bytes Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
So you've heard all that travel stuff, and you're thinking that you're like me and you didn't get to go to this stuff, you didn't get to go to Iceland. Well, I've got a free trip you can take from your own home. This one's kind of interesting. The Tate Museum in Britain has remote control robots to explore the museum after dark. It's the URL, you can look it up, but if you look up look up Tate Britain After Dark, but it's afterdark.tate.org.uk. Right now you have to sign up for it to control the robot, but they have these actual physical robot chassis with a circular base that's like 24 inches in diameter. It has a bumper around the bottom that acts as like a kill switch, so if it hits something, the bot shuts down. Then it's got a camera and LED spotlights, and you basically drive it around the museum and look at the stuff. To promote it, they let everyone's favorite astronaut, Chris Hadfield, the Major Tom singing space station guy, took one of them for a spin from his Toronto studio. He said that the experience was so seamless that he got really caught up in examining the art in this new way rather than focusing on the fact that he was so far from the museum itself. You can tune in. There's a live stream from 10 p.m. until 3 a.m. Greenwich Mean Time, so you'll have to do whatever the math is with that. I think they're about 6 hours different. I think Greenwich Mean Time is about 6 hours different from us now, so it's still going, but only for a little longer. So you can always, if you sign up for it, you can always like pretend you're casing the joint to steal stuff. So that the live feed looks pretty cool. Just watching the art go by from the robots moving around. In less cool internet news. This one, you know, there's trolls all the time, but apparently, you know, there's been the whole thing with Robin Williams, after his death. And there's been, on the positive side, there's been lots of outpouring of well wishes and thoughts on social media. But, you know, hours after posting a heartbreaking tribute to her father, Robin Williams' daughter Zelda announced that she was deleting Twitter and Instagram because of internet trolls. Basically, there were people who were sending her saying horrible things, but worse, they were sending her photoshopped pictures that were, you know, alleged to be of her father, you know, killing himself. And there's one of those where the thing I waited for when I saw this is that this would be one of those cases where I really would like to see Anonymous do the online vigilante thing. I'm not a big fan of that approach most of the time, but that kind of thing, when people are attacking grieving people, I hate it when the Westboro Baptist Church people do it, and I hate it when people do it to grieving families online. And so it's a sad deal, and you just hope that those people, you know, burn in hell. But that would be a good one, you know, for all the supposed lack of privacy. I'm surprised nobody's been able to figure out who these people are and deal with it, or at least encourage them to behave in a more human fashion. So just a little aside on that one. And while everybody was, you know, while everybody was at DEF CON, all that, Houston actually approved the rules for Uber, you know, made the negotiations and passed that. So this becomes more – so this piece of news obviously is a lot more useful. Uber released an update for its app, adding new features the company calls Cruise Control for both the rider and driver versions. For riders, the update includes a new destination entry that allows the driver to
some nice internet connection we had once.
Oh, well.
So we lost Pete with the internet dropped, and that meant the Skype dropped.
Everything's gone. Did you talk about BGP stuff? I was listening to Flicted.
The internet's back now. But we may have lost him more permanently than we think. So sorry about that, Pete. All right. Well, 713-526-5738 is the number to call if you want to be on the air with Technology Bites. I don't know where Pete got in the news thing. We were chatting in the control room while the news is going on, as we're prone to do. We'll see if we can get Pete back. But in the meantime, we'll go to the phone, 713-526-KPFT. If you have a question or comment you'd like to make about technology or the show, we're open to the...
Currently unavailable.
All right, Groovehouse, you want to give us this next call?
Sure, why not? How about the first call?
The first call.
Sure, we'll take the first call.
All right.
All right, up first on the show.
Up next.
Is the first call on the last Saturday of the first Friday.
He's so particular.
I know.
On Wednesday.
All right, go for it.
It's Bob.
Hey, Bob. You're on the air, Bob.
As he said, I did a wash and fold on my key fob, my USB deal. It had fabric softener with it. So do I need to dip it in alcohol for a while?
Springtime fresh. You well, can do that, but here's the trick. If you do that, you need to find the 99.97 isopropyl alcohol, which is really tough to do. Yeah. You almost have to order it offline. I tried going around to a number of pharmacies recently when we had some people at work spill a lot of coffee into their laptop. Uh-huh. And the best I could find locally were some swabs. But you can order it online, and I've also heard this, that a lot of people will use it to prime fuel lines. So automotive part shops may have it, although yeah, I've yet to track that down.
Oh, okay.
But the main thing is if you use like the 91.7%, which is what most grocery stores have, they usually carry like a 70% and something that's just a little over 90%.
Right.
That'll almost do more harm than good because it'll still leave residue behind. And you're introducing some water because it's 9% impurities is what you're pouring into your keyboard. Or into your USB drive, rather.
All right. Thanks a lot.
I mean, have you tried plugging now that it's dry, hopefully it's dry, have you tried plugging it into your computer to see what would happen?
With fabric softener, I'm nervous about it because of that static reducing routine might just track the electricity all through it.
Yeah.
Actually, well, static, if it has less static, it should be safer to use around, I would think, peripherals, right?
All right. Well, I suppose an isopropyl alcohol bath might help.
Here's the other thing you can do, too. Depending on what model it is, a lot of times they're just a plastic case around it. So if you don't mind prying that plastic case apart, it's usually just a single board, and you can actually see what's going on in there. Or if that's the case, you can actually maybe take some Q-tip swabs or something, and maybe just with a little bit of normal alcohol, instead of giving it the full bath, just dab some stuff off there. Anywhere you see a blue tinge or whatever kind of fabric softener you have in there.
Oh.
Let me ask you this. I mean, what's on the USB drive?
It's 32 gigs of what other people consider nonsense. You know how that goes, but you think it's worth something.
Right. So, yeah, I mean... Using a USB as permanent storage of any kind is usually a bad idea, even when you don't launder it.
The main thing you...
Missed backing you got up by 3 days.
The main thing you want to look for is any kind of like electrical traces that could arc or that you could short. So like I said, if you can get that single board out, if you get lucky and it's just a board like PCB with some stuff soldered onto both sides, you could probably visually inspect it and see if it's safe to plug in.
I saw a trick with epoxy. How do you feel about that?
It depends on what the trick is.
Coating it with epoxy?
Well, I mean, if you've already got... The issue is, I think coating it with epoxy is a good trick before you make your USB fob springtime fresh, but I think afterwards it would just... If there are any shorts already on the board, it would just glaze over their shorts. I don't think it would improve the situation.
Yeah. All right. Who needs to wash the dog after you accidentally run it over?
Yeah, exactly. Sorry. Like that. All right, well, thanks for your call, Bob. Good luck with your USB drive, and hopefully you'll get it sorted out.
Thanks.
All right, thank you. All right, so what do we got figured out on the San Antonio thing?
I think I'm back.
Yeah, was it us or was it you?
I think it was you, because I tried to call, and it did the person you're trying to reach is not online and all that fun stuff.
Are you talking about the BGP stuff in the news today?
Apparently not.
Okay.
No. The one I was talking about was adding QR codes to gravestones,
That's
which
a bad idea.
seems to me, I you know, I'm a techie guy. I don't think that it makes sense because of the problem of where does a QR code go anytime, you know, after a period of time. Actually, they charge $150 the one of them for an interactive obituary hosted online by Quiring Monuments, which has a promotional video called Living Headstones. QR codes turn headstones into interactive memorials. I don't know what memorials are, but yeah, they're not the only company that's had the idea. There's another company called Forever Headstones that promises, quote, a much richer experience in memorializing the departed through the use of QR codes. I don't know. I think until they can do the whole Obi-Wan Kenobi, like, you know, hologram or, you know, Princess Leia hologram thing, that that's not going to the QR code thing is kind of limited. And a gravestone lasts a lot longer than I would think a website about it. Last couple things on the news, I guess, to just finish those out. Google and HP have been discussing an enterprise partnership for the past year with little progress made, according to a new report. Topics have included a Nexus tablet with hardware encryption, as well as a version of Google Now for business data. This comes after, you know, while in the past couple of weeks when Apple and IBM paired up with the idea to get basically getting iPads more in, you know, more inroads into the enterprise market. So I think that the thing you're going to see with this kind of pair up, with these kind of pair ups happening, you know, apparently Google and HP haven't been able to make it work yet, but they're talking, is that you're going to have a lot more tablets doing a lot more things at businesses, because it's going to get more useful. Obviously, once businesses are telling, you know, once the enterprise support is available for these devices and businesses are telling companies like HP and Google and Apple and IBM what they want, which HP and IBM obviously have some good connections in the enterprise business world, then you're going to see a lot more usage for these devices. And I wonder if maybe a decrease in the number of people who even need a desktop or a laptop to do their job, if a lot more of that stuff is going to start happening on people's tablets, which is kind of, you know, I guess that's a lot more Star Trek-y. That's a lot more futuristic than a lot of the technology changes we've seen, even with the internet and stuff over the past year. There's also talk of things like Siri for business, or, you know, or similar things where you do voice to get information as you need it. And the final thing is a rumor. It, you know, school's about to start. It's kind of quieting down again on the new stuff. In September is going to be the iPhone event. That's coming. The new rumor, there's been some rumors lately coming out about the screens for the next generation iPads. The latest rumor is that they're going to have matte displays instead of glossy for easier reading. So it sounds like there's sort of being a focus on working on ways to have a special, like, anti-glare coating and things like that to make it easier to read the iPad in stronger light, which presumably that's something that people would have been complaining about. Let's see. Sources have tagged September 9th for a special media event where Apple will introduce updated iPhone models with larger displays. Apple hasn't confirmed that event yet, or said if it plans to make any announcements about the iPad or the rumored iWatch. But, of course, we'll keep an eye on that and tell you about it as we get news. And that is the Technology Bytes news. I'm Peter Hughes.
All right. Thanks for that, Peter. All right. So phone number here is 713-526-5738. If you want to be on the air, I see you have a couple of calls in the queue, but we have plenty of open lines and plenty of desire to talk to you and talk tech with you and answer your computer questions here live on the air. So Groovehouse, who has been abandoned in the studio by Flicted, who's walked off in a bit of a post honeymoon stupor. Oh, he's come back now.
He's drinking.
He's poured it on now. You all right, Flicted? You had to get something to drink. Okay, that's fine.
Yeah, I'm thirsty.
Thirsty. Work up a powerful thirst getting married and going to DEF CON.
It's 100% juice.
100% Groovehouses. Yeah.
100% liquid.
liquid over the board. It's sealed.
Well, I haven't opened it
yet.
All right, Groovehouse. Mm-hmm. Who do we have up?
Up next, we're going to speak with Kenneth.
Kenneth, hello? You're on the air.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
I have a question about some hardware. I had had taken an old computer. It was a Windows 98 machine. Bought a Western Digital drive, put it in there, and used it as kind of like a backup server years ago. Just recently, the power supply went out on that machine. Obviously, I don't want to spend a lot of time doing working on it. So I took that add-on hard drive, which had some music on it I want to recover, and tried to install it on a Dell Dimension that's probably 2005, 2006 vintage. Also, and it's Windows NT. It was not really a good fit. The only IDE devices that it, oh, this is an IDE drive. The only IDE devices it had were the two, the CD-ROM and the DVD ROM. So I decided to buy an external drive, enclosure. Came in today, plugged in IDE, USB, plug it in, and the device manager sees it, but nothing else. It doesn't come up on like my computer to show up as an active drive. So I was just wondering what else to go look at. As far as I know, it's a plug-and-play device.
It's a USB external drive is what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay, so you're plugging into the USB port of a computer?
Yes.
And it shows up in the device manager, but it's not showing up as a drive.
Correct.
Now, has the drive ever been written to? Has it ever been
used? Yes, it is. It was set up and worked fine under Windows 98. In fact, would access it over our home network from the Windows 98 or from the Windows XP machine. So it had been working until the power supply on this home computer went out.
Okay, so you actually had an event which could have damaged the drive.
Potentially, but what I was able to do, I did try putting it in place of one of the IDE devices on my XP machine,
mm-hmm.
and it would show up a little bit, but then it wouldn't stay. In fact, I even successfully copied some stuff off, but then it would seem like it went away.
Well, you have two potential possibilities. Yeah. We have two possibilities for failure on this thing. One is the enclosure. So yeah. It may be that the enclosure is completely damaged.
Okay.
And that's why when you plug it in, it's kind of picking it up, but there's no communication between the actual hardware of the enclosure and the drive itself.
Ah, okay. So even though my computer sees it as the drive and gives me...
Your computer sees it as a device.
Well, and it actually reports the model number of the drive.
Okay. But it's not reading the data off the drive. It's not seeing the format, or it's not seeing the file system.
Correct.
So you take it and you take the drive out of the enclosure and hook it up as a regular IDE drive, and the system sees it partially.
It's like it won't hold on to it. But I figured that was because it was trying to play on the IDE bus with a ROM, a CD-ROM device.
Not necessarily, okay. But you could take the CD-ROM offline and the DVD offline and plug it right into the IDE, so there's no conflict with any master-slave situation. Does the drive itself have jumpers on it?
It does, and it was set up as a slave in the old device because it was the slave second IDE device. Now, this Windows XP machine, the C drive is... the small, narrow blue cord instead of the wide cable. And that's, so I assume there's no conflict.
There shouldn't be any conflict there, but what you want to make sure is, what I would do is, first of all, just take it out of the enclosure and try to hook it up as the only IDE device.
Okay, and that makes sense.
On the IDE bus, and also make sure that it's jumpered properly as a master or, primary drive.
Okay.
Because if you're hooking it up with another IDE device on the same bus, then you're right, they may be conflicting or they may be challenging each other for who's the master drive. Because a lot of times what will happen is that you'll have two IDE buses on a computer, and you'll have one where the CD is plugged in, and you have the other one where the hard drive is plugged in. And in that situation, master and slave don't really care.
Okay.
But in a situation where you have the CD drive and a hard drive connected to the same IDE connector.
It might be fun. Yeah.
If one's set up as the master and the other one is set up as a slave, but they're not set up properly, or they won't work. Yeah. So to reduce that possible conflict, just to see if you can get access to the drive, is to take that drive and make it the only device on the IDE. The other option is just go buy a $20 enclosure.
Well, that's basically what I did. I ordered it from Amazon, and it came today, and you know, it seemed to do okay, other than the fact that it's not recognized at all. I did better trying to jump on the IDE
right
bus. So I'll try that as the next stop, because maybe it is something on the, you know, in this enclosure.
Could be.
It's hard to double check.
Well, that's what I would try.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, I have a question for you guys.
Okay.
Having listened to the earlier discussion about the Fun Drive and everything, having been a long, long time supporter of KPFT, I figure you guys get out in your community, your listening community, more than, perhaps even more than most, with you know, the Geek Gathering and everything like that. Do you get a sense that there are people out there listening to, I mean, they're aware of KPFT? I've struggled with how to do that. Unfortunately, I think I'm of the demographic that most age group, the biggest age group associated with KPFT, which is well over, you know, we're not millennials, we're not even Gen X's. So what I worry is that we're not, somehow the younger generation is not latching on and participating.
I think that's a very real possibility, because the way that media is being mm-hmm. delivered via the internet now, mm-hmm. and the ability to go pick and choose your media streams, it's possible that, you know, we're not picking up new listeners the younger generation.
Yeah, I wondered that, but I didn't know if perhaps, you know, y'all obviously make announcements. I assume y'all are not the only announcement for the Geek Gathering. So I just wondered if you found that when you go there, people are aware of your show and even aware of KPFT. So,
well, I've come to discover, what I think I'm realizing right now, is that, you know, I think a lot of people are aware of the show, but not necessarily actively listening anymore. You know, we've been around for so long that we have I know there's a lot of people that show up at the Geek Gatherings. We promote it not just on the air, but we promote it via social media.
Yeah.
And it's become a thing that's kind of a standalone. It's affiliated with the show, but
it's got a life of its own.
It's got a life of its own, and it's not always just listeners of the show, the current listeners. I mean, it's people that know about it, may have listened in the past, and that's the kind of thing I'm seeing overall with, at least with this show, is that people know about it, they know it exists, but their need for this show may have decreased because of the way that technology has changed.
Yeah.
We started up 20 years ago.
Right.
Certainly there were less resources available. Now there's a plethora of resources, and technology is so ubiquitous and so much easier to use. I think you see things where the knowledge is way less arcane than it ever was.
And that's a good point. So I'm sort of thinking, you know, looking for clues as to how do we get KPFT in the next generation, but I don't know.
Yeah,
mostly we're hoping for Microsoft to really screw up with their next operating system.
Well, that's probably a safe bet, unfortunately. All right, well, I don't want to keep you. I was going to make one other observation, but I can't remember what it was now. So, oh, I know what. I encourage y'all to diversify into things like, you know, I've heard occasionally, you know, talk about the maker movement and some events around town and stuff like that. So I would broaden it a little bit. I would encourage you to, you know, give free rein to that temptation to broaden it into, you know, other technologies that are impacting on people's lives.
Okay.
But I enjoy your show tremendously.
Well, thanks for that. Right. Appreciate your call.
All right, bye.
Bye. All right, 713-526-5738, the introspective version episode of Technology Bites. 713-526-KPFT. Groovehouse, if you can pull up from your I see you contemplating your navel there. Or is that your phone? Is that your iPhone?
Oh, no.
We're just all sad now. It's been such a sad, sad show, at least for me.
Well, I think it was worse.
I'm not shirtless room.
I think it was worse for the people that were here last week than for those of us that were gallivanting around the planet. All right, Groovehouse.
Who does have a shirt on and is not looking at his
you
navel.
You can contemplate your navel without actually looking at it.
I was not contemplating my navel. I had my phone.
I didn't see your phone. I just saw you looking down into your lap. Okay, maybe it wasn't your navel. Right, it can't be verified that you're wearing pants.
He did say he has a shirt on. He's wearing pants.
He did not elaborate further than that.
He was looking at his phone. It had a picture of his navel on it.
Oh, you guys.
Selfie. His navel selfie. All right. So, it looks like we're actually about to break for the first hour has gone by so flawlessly and entertainingly.
Yes.
The perfect show.
If you're on hold, hang tight.
Yeah, if you're on hold, please hold for a little bit longer. We're going to do a station break here and take care of some station business.
Remember, you are the show.
And we will come back in the second hour. Do we have a Barrett time for the second hour?
No, of course I'm sorry. Not. Of course not.
Maybe Barrett can talk about the
BGP is broken. I can talk about BGP.
You can talk about BGP?
For all of 30 seconds. I know what's going on with it, I think.
You do?
You got it all figured out?
I got it all figured out.
Are you the Snowden of the BGP? Insiders?
Everything is broken. That's all you need to know.
It's all busted.
And we can fix it.
It's all pipes. Just a little PVC glue and you're good
to go. It's just a tubes.
Series of tubes.
Easy enough.
Series of tubes.
There is no BGP.
There is no BGP.
The BGP is a lie.
The chair is against the wall.
John has a long mustache.
That's who came in first at DEF CON.
John with a long mustache.
Barrett's nemesis.
Maybe this will soothe your agitated souls.
Maybe it'll put you to sleep.
Maybe.
I'm going to hit the snooze for 3.5 minutes.
Just tilt your head down and contemplate a nap.
Or your belly button.
Can I see the picture of your belly button, Groove?
Tweet it.
Hard to reach
tweet
right
it
now.
Out later.
All right.
All right. Well, that music.
Get some followers.
That's what we need.
Some belly button fetish followers.
Oh, my phone's blowing up.
All right. Well, that music tells us that the break is coming up, so we're gonna bow out here for a few minutes, take care of some station business, and we'll come back for the second hour of the show. And we got two calls on hold, so please keep holding, Adam and Meredith. We will come back to you and get your calls on the air in the second half of the show, right after the station break and the station business. So you're listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
Groovehouse,
contemplating his navel.
Did you know you can find KPFT on the social networking sites Twitter and Facebook? You certainly can, and we'd love you to add us as a friend and get us connected with friends of yours. Join our fan page and check out a special video message from General Manager Dwayne Bradley, as well as keep up with KPFT programmers and staff. Visit facebook.com/KPFT Houston to join us. To follow us, visit twitter.com/KPFT. With both, you can link up with other KPFT listeners, get the latest news about the station, and find lots of extras. It's fun, so catch up with KPFT online. Again, on Twitter, visit twitter.com/KPFT. On Facebook, visit us at facebook.com/KPFT Houston. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, 90.1 KPFT Houston.
Pronto vendrá un pledge drive a KPFT y nosotros necesitamos su ayuda para hacerlo un suceso. Por favor, considere ser un voluntario para contestar nuestros teléfonos durante el programa de lenguaje en español. Usted contestará escuchadores como usted y ayudará esta comunidad de radio. En no más una hora o dos, usted puede ayudar a tomar donaciones. Su esfuerzo será la diferencia a poder ser esto un ambiente divertido. Personas interesadas en contestar teléfonos necesitan que ser disponibles los martes y sábados y ser bilingües en inglés y español. Usted será un voluntario en el estudio de KPFT en la 419 Lovett Boulevard. Para escribirse, contacte nuestra oficina de voluntarios al 713-526-4000 o mándenos un email a voluntier@kpft.org. Esto es KPFT Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston. Now back to Tanks Debate.
All right, and we're back. All right, so it is the top of the hour, second hour of Technology Bites. We invite you to call in at 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air. Groovehouse, I see calls in the queue. Who's up next?
Up next on the second half of the show, we're going to start it off with Meredith.
Meredith, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Thank you very much. Hello.
Hello.
I'm here.
Go right ahead.
We copy.
Over.
Over.
Well, actually, I do.
Is this Roger? Roger, this is over. Over, Roger.
Roger, Roger.
This is done. Over. Done.
My communication experience dates back to that.
So. Yeah.
I have a problem with my desktop. The event was that I was in just working on a Word document. All of a sudden, the display went to nothing. The computer was still on as far as the lights and such. I could not get anything back. I did a hard stop and a hard start. And it will load half the BIOS, and then the display goes dark again. I thought it might be the video card, so I changed that out. That didn't seem to do anything. I started unplugging devices until I was left with only the C drive. Each time, the same thing. It would boot half of the BIOS and then go blank. But the light on the computer says that it's still functioning. I even thought, well, maybe the motherboard battery went out and I changed that out. Nothing seems to have worked. So I suppose my question is, do I go invest in another motherboard and processor, or is there something that obvious that I've missed?
Now, this is a Mac?
No, this is a home-built PC.
Home-built PC, okay. So,
what kind of video adapter do you have on there? Is it like HDMI or is it just standard VGA?
Standard VGA.
And, you know, do you remember exactly how far it gets in the post? Is it just past the memory?
Well, the fact that it's posting tells me that your display adapter and your display are working.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Where it's not getting any further is it's not showing you the operating system booting up. So that's right. Telling me that it's more likely a problem with your hard drive. Because the BIOS doesn't come off the hard drive. What it sounds like it's breaking down at the point that it starts to load the operating system and it's not loading. I'm surprised it's not giving an error message, like, you know, no hard drive or trying to do a boot from the network or something like that. But it's getting to the hard drive and where it loads up all the drivers. Have you tried starting it in safe mode or any of that?
I only got that screen once in the whole process, and then it just went blank after I pressed start. I even tried using the backup hard drive as the C drive, and that didn't do anything either.
Well, it's possible that once it gets to the point that it's trying to load in the operating system, there could be a problem with the actual system board. It's not easy to diagnose. I if you're saying that you tried it with a different hard drive that you know is good and that's not working, then it's possible that you have a system board or CPU or memory issue. How much memory do you have in here?
6 gigs.
Seems like an odd amount of memory to have in a computer.
Well,
why do you have 6 gigs? Is it 4 twos, or I mean, is it 3 twos or 6 ones, or how's that configured?
That's a good question. It's been a long time since I built this, so.
Well, you know, if it's been a long time since you built it, I mean, I don't know how much money I would put into trying to necessarily resurrect it. I mean, how old is the computer?
Well, I've been trying to figure that out. It's somewhere between 4 and 6 years old.
I mean, you could go buy a new system board, but, I mean, the chances are a new system board's going to have a, you know, go ahead.
Do you have a CD you can boot from? Like either
an
old Windows CD?
It won't boot from the CD.
So you can get into the BIOS and say boot from CD, or you can F2 and say change the boot order, and it won't boot from the CD either. Does it do the exact same thing that it does when it tries to boot from the hard drive? It just blanks out?
Yeah. I can occasionally get to the boot sequence screen, and it always keeps going back to floppy. So I have to change it back to the hard drive.
So it's intermittent.
CD, depending. And it goes through the same thing. Half the BIOS loads, and then it goes down.
This wouldn't be related at all to the CMOS battery, would it? The fact that it's resetting itself? I mean,
it
I
could be.
Think
he
would,
mentioned that. That
I wouldn't think it would keep it from booting, though, but maybe. I mean,
I changed that, too.
Okay. You might see if you can find the exact same motherboard online, because it should be pretty cheap now if it's 4 to 6 years old, and you could replace it and keep all your components the same.
Well, what I was thinking was that if it indeed is the board and or the CPU, that I would upgrade to something that's faster and will give me more memory.
Yeah, the fact that it won't boot from your hard drive or the CD-ROM sounds like a hardware issue a little bit to me at this point.
Yeah. It's just, it's hard to determine with ready to go. I like Flickton's idea of maybe trying to source a replacement hard drive of the exact same make and model, because the price should be pretty low.
All right, yeah.
I mean, if you're interested in resurrecting what you have.
Well, I do need some of the information off of the...
I mean, if you just need data off the drive, you can take the hard drives out and put them in an external USB enclosure and connect them to any computer that works and draw the data off of it.
Yeah, as long as the hard drive's still working, that's not really a problem because, yeah, you can pull the hard drive out and you can either put it in an external closure. They also make adapters that are external. You just hook power and the adapter into the back of the hard drive. And then it's got a USB on the other end. You plug that into whatever system,
right.
And then it'll just mount up as a USB drive, and you can pull whatever data you need to off of it.
Well, that's the only thing is I would like some of the data.
That's easy enough to get as long as the drives are intact. If it's not actually, if it doesn't end up being the drives that are the problem, and it seems like they're probably
and
not.
You don't have like 3 RAIDs. Software rated or something.
No.
In fact, at this point, I would go ahead and pull the drive and just stop trying to boot from it, just in case it is some kind of a hardware problem or electrical issue. You don't hurt the drive in any way.
Well, I may have already done that. I don't know.
Do you have another computer?
I have a laptop that I'm picking up my emails from.
Well, you might just go get an enclosure for the drive and connect that drive to your laptop and see if you can read the data off of it.
Well, I have old IDE enclosures, but I don't have an SATA, so I can get that easy enough.
Yeah, you can just pick up the cable, too, for about half the price of an enclosure.
Yeah,
you don't
even need an enclosure.
Go.
If
yeah.
you get a SATA to USB adapter, you could go that route.
Yeah, like the one I'm talking about, actually, you can get them at... you can get them online, or you can get them at Micro Center, Fry's, and stuff. And they have usually have a full size IDE. They have a laptop size IDE, and a SATA connector. So it's all 3 connectors on one side, and a power adapter, and then USB on the other. So you can hook up any of those 3 kind of drives one at a time on it, and then it becomes a USB mounted drive on whatever you plug it into.
Well, that's sounds like the least expensive alternative.
Well, it's certainly, it's not very expensive. It's a good way to find out if you can get to your data. I mean, just going the route, because trying to resurrect this old computer may not be worth it, especially if you find out that your drive is bad. So that would at least be that would give you better guidance in which way to go.
Thank you very much.
All right. Well, thanks for your call. Have a good night.
All right.
All right. 713. Go ahead.
I was going to say, plus having one of those external adapters is kind of a nice thing to have anyway. Because, I mean, you don't use it all the time. But if you build computers yourself at all, if you have, like, have built several, you have old hard drives laying around, it's just a nice thing to have to, like, spin up a drive and see what's on it or pull
it off.
It's
kind of a Swiss Army knife.
Yeah, then they're not that expensive.
And you can take it on the plane.
Yeah.
Whereas you cannot with Swiss Army knife.
All right. Groovehouse?
Yes.
Who's up next?
All right, up next, we're going to speak with Adam.
Adam, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Well, good morning. I've been contemplating my navel virtually while y'all were having too much fun without me.
Well, there you go. What can
you guys,
we do for
you? I mean, you really are having way too much fun on this show.
But, well, at least we are.
Well, hey, man, somebody's got to.
Well, you know, we do our part.
Hey, man, party on. Wait, the end of the world may be coming, but party on.
Party on, Garth.
I thought we just survived that. We got to do another one?
I don't know what
how many end of the worlds are there going to be?
Next Thursday?
Not tomorrow, but next Thursday.
All right.
Yeah, man, get ready. It's going to be a good one.
All right.
Okay. Now, seriously, this should be a lot less difficult than that other one. Basically, what I got is this old Dell Latitude. You know, it was a workhorse while I had it. The problem was it had Vista. We'll keep the editorials low, please, because what my question is, you know, the thing died a couple of years ago, and I don't just want to throw it in the landfill because I know what those techno robots do when they reassemble. But I managed to one day bring it up and heal it, you know. And now we got to consider this is a five-year-old computer. Battery's probably a piece of you-know-who. I did heal it. I did do some work, got online with it, this, that, and the other. But one time when I turned it on, it started going through this stupid Windows. Windows is trying to heal itself, and it goes into an endless test loop. Now, will a dead laptop battery, make it do that?
No.
It shouldn't. I mean, as long as you
unless it's plugged in. Right. If it's plugged in and it has power, I mean, if it's a situation where the computer is running and the battery goes completely dead and the computer just shuts off because it loses power in the middle of something, that could cause a corruption with the data, which then might affect your operating system.
This is really a Windows trying to heal itself thing. What I'm wondering is, would a battery make it? I'm going to go Linux with this thing if I get it back up, all right? So I'm not really concerned about the evil system that's on it, and there's no data that's worth.
If there's no data that you care about, you can certainly load whatever operating system you want to on there and see if you can get it to come back, because the reason why it's trying to heal itself is either the drive is bad or the data on the drive has corrupted.
Okay, if that is true, then it happened sometime between the point where I got it up and running. You know, it was down for a couple of years, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I got it up and did some diagnostics and defrags and, you know, the basic, you know, real truant stuff. And it was working just fine. It was surfing, it was downloading, it was writing and editing. I mean, all the basic, you know, dumb pet tricks, okay?
Okay.
It could be like, you know, like people right before they pass away where, you know, you didn't use that thing for a long time. It's like, you know, getting older and sitting there decaying. And then all of a sudden it feels fine and everything's good and then it dies.
I mean, that could be the issue. That's as simple as it is. And, you know, and like I said, I'm just trying to avoid throwing it into the nanotech, you know, feeding pit.
I will say hard drives are definitely one of the things that can be affected by that. I mean, if they're turned off for years, they can freeze or they can start to decay and they'll start up and they'll run a while and then they'll die. Or likewise, if you leave them.
Jog the heads out of shock. You know I'm joking, but
no.
Light tap, so yeah. Unless you're to destroy it.
I mean, for a little while, it did function very well, and I understand what you just said. The real question I'm going with is, you know, I mean, if buying a battery would heal it, that's no big deal.
No, the thing is that whatever has happened, and the replacing the battery at this point is not going to fix it. Something is damaged.
Yeah.
And the reason it's behaving the way it's behaving is not because the battery. That's not, but I'm saying the battery could have caused it. But, the damage has already been done. So you either have to replace the hard drive or you have to reinstall the operating system.
I can't do because I don't have those disks.
Since you can get Linux for free and since you're thinking about installing Linux, you don't care about the data that's on the drive,
right.
You could hang up the phone, get a Linux CD or make a Linux CD from a computer that's connected to the internet and it has a CD drive and install Linux on it and see what happens.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter about the battery because what I'm saying is that the drive is either bad and that's why Windows is corrupted and trying to heal itself.
Right.
Or something caused Windows to get corrupted that was due to a power failure.
That was temporary,
but now it's gone away. But the damage is done.
But it could be just software layer damage.
Software layer damage,
so the hard drive
exactly.
might
Instead
still
of hardware.
Be fine.
Right.
Right. So, but the battery by itself wouldn't be making this go on.
No, the battery would not be why it's continuing to happen. The battery might be why it happened in the first place.
As long as it's hooked into the wall for power and it's not trying to run off battery, it's never trying to flip to using the battery, then the battery should be out of the picture.
Okay.
It's like you got cut and now the wound is infected.
Okay, that's a good analogy.
All right.
Seriously. Okay.
All right. Thanks for your call. We appreciate it.
I got one more.
No, we're gonna go move on to other calls and appreciate it. So 713-526-5738 is the number to call if you want to be on the air with us tonight. 713-526-KPFT. Groove House.
Yes.
I see we have a call in the queue. He's turned his back to us, so now we can't tell if he's contemplating his navel or what. Who do we have? Man.
Up next on the Belly Button Show, it's going to be Michael.
Michael, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, guys. How are you tonight?
Good. How are you?
Well, I'm hanging out with the cool people. I was listening to your show, and I thought you might help me with an idea that I've been kind of kicking the can around with. I've got this 8-year-old Toshiba notebook that kind of gave up the ghost as far as the operating system goes. I loved XP on that thing. It seemed to work for what I was doing, but it had so many errors in it that it would continuously freeze up. So I basically decided to go ahead and get a new one. But I don't want to put that thing into the trash heap just yet. I really want to know how to go about converting that to a musical jukebox that I could actually use one of the USB ports to plug into a digital to analog converter. And someone told me that I could actually use Linux as a software platform to do this with.
Well, what is the digital analog converter going to do for us?
Does it not have audio out?
Essentially make the sound of the audio to a more high fidelity tone.
Oh, so you're going to buy like a higher end DAC?
Exactly.
Okay.
There are a number of distributions that will do that for you. All the way, you can start out with XBMC. Which is, I think, Xbox Media Center.
Originally, yeah,
is what it started out
it was,
as.
It was to install on the Xbox, so yeah, it's different.
But
Xbox
what it'll
Media
do
Center.
Is it'll catalog all your music, all your movies, all your TV shows, allow you to play that back. You can connect to it over a web interface, stream it out to different places.
That's actually an application to load on top of the Linux.
Actually that ships as its own distribution. So what they're doing is they're actually packaging all the different things you need into a single image, and then they give you instructions on how to load it, and they make all the magic happen. When that boots, you don't really see much Linux. You pretty much just see XBMC. So it looks much more like an appliance than it does like a computer that you'd be running all this stuff on to achieve the ends.
That.
The main thing to look at is go and do a little bit of research on the ADC or on the, I'm sorry, the DAC, the DAC you're looking for, and right. just make sure that there are Linux drivers for it. That's going to be the okay. thing you want to look at first. And then that way, you know, whatever you get, you can make sure it works with XBMC or whatever distribution you choose versus trying to, you know, go out and buy one and then scrambling to find a distribution that probably doesn't support it. So
okay. And what was the name of that application software again?
XBMC, like Xbox Media Center.
Okay.
X-Ray, Bravo.
And
I forgot M,
the last
Charlie.
Question I have. It's kind of weird because I want to say I'm rediscovering radio in a sense since I got a set of headphones mm-hmm. and I was listening to KPFT on my phone. Okay. And I started out listening to the I Love Radio thing, but realized I really wanted to listen to local radio. So I started looking around for an application that would allow me to tune in different radio stations,
mm-hmm.
not just locally, but I think globally. I found one, but it's the streaming on it is absolutely horrible. It really lacks consistency. And I wanted to know if you guys knew of one that was actually worth downloading and putting on your
I wouldn't.
Equipment.
So, generally speaking, I wouldn't necessarily try and find a program that lets me get to all the different radio stations. I would generally try and find a listing of where all the different radio stations are streaming from. So, for instance, like if you're into KPFT, rather than like right. going to an aggregator that was rebroadcasting the stream from KPFT, I would just go to kpft.org and get the stream there.
Go to like Internet Explorer to download that.
Are you looking for specific types of streams? Are you looking for podcasts or like music streams?
I would love music streams that are reliable.
What kind of music? What kind of music?
Well, I like progressive music. Anything that's not related to Clear Channel, I really like.
Well, yeah.
Well, for example, there's two that I particularly tend to listen to and that I really like a lot. One of them is DI for digitally imported. DI.FM, and it's got about, well, it keeps increasing. Now it's 40-something or 50-something channels. It's all electronic, and okay. it's broken down. I mean, electronic music has so many categories. There can only be about 5 to 7 bands in a category before they have to split and create a new category.
Okay.
So there's like, you know, there's like dubstep, and there's like deep dubstep, and there's deep downtown dubstep. I'm just making these up, but they do. They subsplit a lot. So there's electronica and chill and techno and house and.
Well, he said progressive. Is that what you meant? Electronic.
No,
I
think he just meant.
Okay.
No,
I'm just saying.
I mean,
I'm just saying.
So DI.FM and the other one is Soma.
SomaFM.com. They have about 16 channels. A lot of their stuff is also electronic, but they do have one that's like James Bond style music called Secret Agent. They have one that's like lounge. Kind of 50s space age electronic lounge music.
Okay.
They have a all female vocal one.
Well, I think the point
but
is
it's
there
decent quality.
There's a number of different music streaming services, and many of which are free.
Right.
That you can tune into rather than, so what you're struggling with or what you may be struggling with is if you go and try to find a particular radio station, say KPFT stream. We have a stream, and it's of a certain quality, and it will only be the quality that it is ever.
Right.
And right. it's in a situation where it's a radio station that also has an internet stream, the stream isn't, you know, it could be different quality. Some stations are going to have better streams than others. And now,
right.
There are other online streaming services that's all they do is online streaming, so their quality tends to be up a notch because they don't have a broadcast
right.
or airwaves presence.
That's what I'm looking for.
So Soma is one, DI is another. You, if you're
there's,
not,
there's a bunch.
There's
Shoutcast,
Pandora. Pandora is good.
Pandora. If you do iHeartRadio, Slacker Radio,
Google Play, even
the
has,
problem with iHeartRadio, and I think that goes back
Spotify.
To what he's talking about originally.
He's
is
trying to
I,
avoid.
I, well, let me finish. iHeartRadio is an aggregator. iHeartRadio is an aggregator of radio stations that stream to the net.
Right.
That's what that is. So it's
but the thing about it is those guys. That station really, you know, you give thumbs up, you give thumbs down, yada yada yada. I really want to get back to, I call it private radio stations like KPFT. I would call it a listener sponsored, but it's still like a private radio because it's not owned by a big corporation.
Trisoma. Really do Trisoma. SOMA FM.com.
And Soma's free, right?
It's free. It's listener supported. So every once in a while, they'll drop in and they'll say, hey, please support us, give us some money, whatever. But there's no ads. That's it.
Right. The other option is, I mean, Spotify is a good one. But you can kind of build your own stations. Pandora is good. You can also subscribe to Sirius Radio online.
Yeah. DIFM is free.
Yeah, I tried Sirius.
With ads every once in a while.
It's really bad.
But if you pay, it's like $5 or $6 a month for DIFM. You get like a much higher bandwidth quality stream, and no ads. And DIFM owns a
commercial in my face.
They also own, I can't remember the name of the other one. DIFM is all electronic, but they also own another company, and I forgot the name. And it's like all jazz and stuff like that. It's like 132. Channels of all different types of jazz and stuff. I can't remember the name of it, but same thing. And if you subscribe to DIFM or the other one, I think you have access to both sides of higher quality bit streams and no ads.
The very last option you've got as far as not paying, I just went to Google and I put in listing of independent radio stations that stream, and I got all kinds of like the top 40 best little radio stations in the U.S., all kinds of listings of aggregate little stations, like whether they're jazz or arts or poetry or what have you, best of the best that other people have kind of curated. So a lot of these, you just go out, put a good Google search together, and you're going to find some of these.
Okay.
And that gets you into little pockets of radio that you probably wouldn't hear unless you were driving through the hills of Arkansas or happened to get lost up on the East Coast or, bouncing off some weird mountains in California. So they're out there for you. You just got to go find them.
Find them. All right, guys. I'm going to check out DIFM and Soma because the one I'm using right now is called TuneIn. The quality, I like the selections that it gives you because I can literally go from one end of the country to the other. But, man, every 5 seconds it wants to stop and rebuffer.
What's your OS? Windows?
It's a Galaxy S4.
Oh, you're using Android.
Yeah, it's an Android. And I have a tablet at home that I'm using it through, too.
I don't know. Because I was going to say, On the Mac, actually built into iTunes is a radio interface that then they go out and search, or people can request to get added. They have like, I don't even know, 200 to 500 channels you can search through to find stuff in different kinds of categories, and they categorize by type of music. But then, like on Linux, there's a music player called Clementine, and Clementine has built-in additions for certain music options. Like they have entries for Pandora and Soma and DIFM and some of those, so they just automatically come in the Clementine browser or the play, music browser. So it'll have your list of what you have MP3s locally on your machine or that you've loaded, but it also has a listings for other services, like, and so it'll show all the Soma FM channels, it'll show all the DIFM channels, etc.
Okay. Excellent, guys. Thank you so much.
All right, well, thanks for your call.
I've been taking feverish notes here, so I hope I can read them later.
All right. Questions.
All right, thank you so much, guys.
Thank you. Bye.
You know, I had to opt out twice, both going to Vegas and coming back.
I had to
opt out both times. In Houston, there wasn't a very long line. And so they were sending everybody through the whatever those things are, particle scatter scanner or whatever.
Backscatter.
But in Vegas, it was like several people before me went through the just the regular metal detector, and then they diverted, and then I was like, yeah, I want to opt out. And then right after me, they started sending everybody back through the so, and then they forgot about me, so I had to stand there and wait for like 15 minutes until they got somebody to come over and pat me down.
They've done that the last couple times I've opted out. They've done that, and I'm wondering if that's not like a stall tactic or like a deterrence, because they said, hey, we don't have anyone over here right now, you're just gonna have to wait.
Yeah.
10, 15 minutes later, someone finally made it over.
And then I was joking, I heard somebody was saying that the I think when we went in Houston, Heather didn't know I opted out. So some guy came by and they were like, "What are you doing?" And she's like, "Oh, I'm waiting for him." And they're like, "Oh, what happened?" And they said, "Oh, what happened to him?" And she's like, "Oh, he always gets picked to get searched." But I actually had opted out, so that's why. No.
She's setting you up.
So the person was like, "Well, you can take a picture, but don't post it and say anything about terrorists or anything because they'll come at you if you do that." So when I was in Vegas, I had one of those little plastic swords that you put cherries on that you put in mixed drinks, and I had it above my ear. And so I was like, I'm just going to go. I'm not going to take it out. I'm not going to say anything. I'm just going to see if they say anything about it. So he did the whole pat down and everything. He didn't mention, he didn't say anything. And so when I got through, I was like, "Oh, I'm going to take a picture of it in my hand and say hey, I managed to get this sword through airport security," and then have a picture of, the little thing in my hand. But Heather was scared that I was going to get, a knock on the door from somebody. So she didn't let me.
Well, we got to Iceland and we were not really unpacking, but getting some things out of our luggage that we had checked on the plane in our first hotel. Cynthia opened her bag, and there's a note from the TSA that said they had searched her bag. And it's like, they never search it on the way back when it's filled with filthy underwear and dirty clothes. They only search it when it's clean. So she just had this uncomfortable feeling for the rest of the trip that her unmentionables had been
mentioned.
Modeled.
Modeled.
Wow, these are some big panties here. All right, Groovehouse.
Yes.
713-526-5738, by the way, if you want to be on the air. We have a half hour left in the show, and we invite you to call in. But I do see we have a call in the queue. So, Groovehouse, who do we have up?
Up next, we're going to speak with Eric.
Eric, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, guys. How's it going tonight?
Good.
I just have a quick question. I'm trying to convert JPEG files to PDF files.
Yeah.
And possibly rename those files at the same time. I was wondering if you guys know a good software program that I can use.
What operating system are you using?
Windows 7.
Now, depending on the program that you're opening up the image files with, you can oftentimes just save as a PDF.
How many do you have? Do you have quite a few, or is it just a...
I could have potentially tens of thousands.
So you're going to want to...
Are you going to want to do that in a batch, or what?
They'll be probably done in a couple of hundred a day.
One at a time?
No. Actually, I want to rename them with a new name, but they're going to be in sequential order with a new number. But in sequential order.
So batch process.
Why are you saving as a PDF as opposed to leaving them in JPEG format?
Well, most of my clients want their reports, their medical reports, they want them in a PDF form to import them into their database. And that's just what they require, is a PDF format.
Well, I know that if you're... Okay, let's just start with the basics. If we're talking about doing it manually... There are a number of what they call print to PDF programs.
Yeah.
There's one that's called Win2PDF, which basically allows you to open up a file of any kind and print it. But rather than printing it out to a printer, it prints it out to a PDF file, which you can then name the file whatever you want, saves it as a PDF wherever you tell it to do that.
Yeah, my problem is I don't want to do them one at a time.
I understand, but I'm talking about concepts here. So there's a concept that you can do this as a print option.
Oh,
now, what I've never had to do is do in mass with renamings. So what I'm looking for is to see if there's a batch. One of these print to PDF programs might have a batch process where you can actually open up multiple files, and that's what I don't know. But that's one place I would look to see if you could find it. But what did you find?
It sounds like this is a business we have to do, because we do insurance stuff at work, and a lot of the attorneys still like PDFs. We've got to convert a lot of stuff to PDF, but we do it in code with PHP. But I know that when we had to convert a lot of our documents over, we looked at some different packages that we'd actually scan through and do exactly what you're looking for. They're probably look and go out there and see what's out there. But one of the examples is C-Vision. It's okay. A document capture. And it's just, it batch converts PDF to, I'm sorry, JPEG to PDF. So if you Google search for batch convert JPG to PDF, you'll probably come up with a few. I would, you know, read some descriptions, see what they want, and be very careful of, if you can, try and download them only from the companies that say that, hey, we're producing this. For instance, like the one that I just listed off as an example.
Right.
That's like cvisiontech.com is your site. I'd be wary of getting them off of shareware sites or other sites like that. You know, yeah. Just do a little bit of smart Googling.
Yeah,
to make
C-Vision
sure.
Looks like they have one that it's designed exactly for what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. They look like a reputable company. Batch converting JPEGs to PDFs.
Now, I don't know what the pricing on that's like, but they might have a free version. And the way that you set it up, you can point it at a directory and you can say, hey, I want to use this prefix. And you might want to say, hey, I want to use a date stamp, or hey, I want to use a sequential part. And
right.
Then I want to have an underscore and have it named this. And then I want to have it, you know, .PDF. And then I want to have it moved here. So you've got a lot of options.
Right. That's exactly what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
So, okay, I'll check out C-Vision and see, and we'll just go from there.
Yeah, compare one or two more. Don't go with the first one I recommend, but use C-Vision as, you know, kind of as a benchmark, and look at one or two others and then make the decision.
Yeah,
after
and
that.
Barrett makes a good point. You know, when you're looking for these kind of programs, try to find them from the manufacturer's or the developer's website. You know, you'll find a number of things at places like CNET Downloads or download.com or places like that, and that's a good way to pick up spyware or viruses.
Yeah, I saw all that stuff, and I was really leery about trying any of that.
But I always, if I find a program that looks promising, I always try to trace it back to the vendor's website and then download it from there rather than grabbing it from one of the shareware sites.
Yeah, a lot of the shareware sites, they'll take the actual program and package it with like some kind of a toolbar or some kind of other thing you don't want. And then,
right,
you know, I've
yeah.
even seen shareware sites, or I guess they're not shareware if they charge, but sites charge for legitimately free products that other people make and build. And, you know, and they're shady anyway, so good luck getting a refund if you actually fall prey to one of those. So just
yeah.
a little bit of research, you know, good internet hygiene should serve you pretty well.
Okay. All right. I appreciate the info.
All right. Thanks for your call.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right. 713-526-5738. If you want to be on the air with Technology Bites, we're taking your calls at 713-526-KPFT. Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who do we have up next?
Up next, we're going to speak with Jim.
Jim, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hi. Sometimes when I try and access the internet, click on the icon, Mozilla or NetZero is my ISP.
Really? NetZero?
Yeah.
Let me just revel in that for a moment. NetZero, I didn't know.
Dial-up?
Still alive. No, it's DSL.
DSL, okay. I didn't even know they were still around, to tell you the truth. But
still
okay.
alive. Well, right. I get a message, and it says something about SLL or SSL, and the link address is too long, or it's looking for addresses www.yahoo or www. So why does that happen?
What is the exact error message?
I don't have it up in front of me. All right,
one thing I will recommend, just for everybody listening, if you get an error message and you can take the exact text of the error message and plug that into a search engine, a lot of times you can find an answer on what's causing that. What you're telling me, unfortunately, is a little bit too vague, so I don't know what's causing that, so let's try to break it down a little bit. First of all, are you in front of that computer?
Yes.
Does it happen all the time? Can you replicate it, maybe get
the
error?
Happened twice in the last month.
Huh?
Happened twice in the last month.
Twice in the last month.
I reset my router, and that took care of it. That's what I found online, one of the suggestions, and a little pinhole in the back. Put something in there and hold it.
Wow, I don't know that. Okay, if you're suspecting it, you know, rather than reset your router, maybe just power cycle it.
That didn't seem to help.
Okay, but you're saying you completely reset your router and that fixed it. I mean, was it happening like all the time and you couldn't get past it, and then you did the reset on the router and that fixed it?
Yes, for a number of days I couldn't get online, so same message.
What kind of router do you have?
It's a two-wire, I think it's...
Okay, it's provided by...
NetZero. That's a gateway, I guess, two-wire.
Well, it's a... You know, if you're having problems with your router, then you might want to consider getting the router replaced, at least through NetZero. If you're paying NetZero for your internet service, they should be able to replace the router.
It's not a virus-related issue or something like that?
Well, the viruses don't typically get on the routers. They tend to get on your operating system. Now, if you had a virus and it was causing you not to be able to get to the internet and you reset your router and then you could get to the internet, then chances are it's not a virus. Okay. If it's a virus, then resetting your router wouldn't have fixed the problem.
There's some stuff that can get up into memory. It just sounds like maybe just your router, the firmware's getting kind of...
I'm assuming that you rebooted your computer, tried that first, and that didn't work.
Right.
So it sounds to me like there's an issue with your router, and it could be an issue with your internet connection as a whole.
Okay.
And then resetting the router kind of resets the connection, and that fixes it. But I would definitely, you know, I would call them Net Zero and see about maybe getting the router replaced or having them see if they can run any kind of diagnostic on it. If that is what fixes the problem every time. Now, if you suspect, I mean, if you have any reason to believe that you have a virus or other malware, do you have that kind of protect? You have software installed to detect and
AVG.
Okay. What about anti-spyware software like Malwarebytes or SpyBot or something like that?
I don't remember if I have that on there.
I would go ahead and, you know, I don't think that's what's causing the issue, but if you're not running any spyware protection, I would go out and download the free version of Malwarebytes and scan your system just to see, because it's possible that something on the computer is sending bad data to the router. It's causing it to kind of act up, and then resetting the router is fixing it. But more than likely, it sounds like it's going to be the router gateway.
Oh, it is SSL certificate issue, I guess.
I don't, without knowing the error message, it's hard to say. Yeah. I mean, if it's all websites.
Well, it's usually if I try and can't find the Net Zero website or can't find Mozilla Firefox or Yahoo or whatever I'm looking for, www, then has whatever the website is.
Right, but if you're going to yahoo.com, if you're going to mozilla.com, if you're going to whatever like that, you're not necessarily doing SSL encryption. I mean, that's more likely. SSL is like when you're trying to connect to your email or when you're going to secure banking sites and things like that. If it's affecting all just general websites, again, without the error message, you know, exact knowing what it is, it's hard to break it down.
There are two types. One is www.thewebsite. The other is, I think it's SSL. It just says the address is too long, and then times out.
Yeah, the address being too long is just odd. If resetting your router fixes the problem, I would get on the phone with them and see if they can't either upgrade the firmware in the router or just give you a brand new router.
Okay.
Just say, hey, look, I'm having issues with them. I'm having to hard reset it twice a month. What can you do to get me some new hardware? Because it sounds like that's the issue.
It's an odd error message.
Yeah, because that stuff to me, that being too long, I've seen like badly formed certificates coming back that are too long, and it'll say like, hey, this doesn't adhere to that. But it could be because maybe the router isn't letting like port 443 traffic come through, or it's, you know, maybe it's dropping something on that. But get a new router and just see if that doesn't improve things. If that hard reset really is the thing that's fixing it, take that out of the mix and then go from there.
All right, well, I appreciate it.
All right, well, thanks for your call. Good luck. Yeah, again, I've seen something having to do with the too long error or whatever, but that's just when you send a request to the website doesn't interpret the request properly, it kicks back that error. So if it was one or two websites, then it could be a problem with the website you're visiting, but if it's affecting all internet traffic, all web traffic, and again, resetting the router fixes it, it points to the router being the issue. The question I would have too is if you have multiple computers connected if more than one computer is having the problem at the same time, again, that points to the router, because what's the common denominator there? All right, 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with Technology Bytes. Looks like we have about 15 minutes left in the show, give or take.
We talk about the BGP issues?
Yeah, go ahead.
Which that may or may not be the cause of our internet issues, but the BGP, it's a major routing protocol. It stands for Border Gateway. What does it stand for? Yeah, Border Gateway Protocol.
Right.
Yeah, that is right. And more or less, it controls the flow of information between several of the networks that make up the internet. So yesterday it started having issues. The issue is that BGP, it connects both tier one providers, so your top tier providers, as well as your last mile connections, like what you'd find between the ISP and your home. And the issue is that the number of routes have been growing steadily, especially the last few years. In fact, the number of internet routes has grown to the point where a full copy of the routing table now contains 512 rows of 1,000 ports. So yesterday they hit 512,000 routes. So the problem is that a lot of the gear, a lot of the older limit of 512K. And when each route takes up 1K, what's happening is starting yesterday morning, all these BGP routers started to lose routes. So AT&T, Verizon, Comcast, I think eBay was down for a little while.
So, but I guess they didn't fail gracefully.
No,
like, they didn't just stop being able to collect new routes.
Yeah, they just would just give up the ghost, a lot of them, depending on what it was. But that was the issue, is the old spec, a lot of the shared memory, I think it was all ternary memory. And because, you know, a lot of the, you're not just having one processor access one bit of memory in these routers. A lot of different processes have to grab onto this shared memory, and it's very expensive, especially back in the day, and we're just running out of it. So that's one of those magic numbers on the internet. When things hit a certain amount, which is 512 on this one, power of two, things fail. So they're getting a handle on it. They're replacing gear, but if you've had issues connecting, that's given a lot of people a lot of issues the last day and a half. It could, you know, be why we're having issues right now. Although the station wireless is just kind of so.
No, I'm having problems too, and I'm wired.
Yeah.
So do we need to replace something?
We need to replace the internet.
Our BGB.
Upgrade.
All right, 713-526-5738. If you want to be on the air, we have all of our lines are open, and we welcome your calls. We're winding down the show, but we do have some time left. I would not mind talking to you. So if you have a question or comment that you'd like to make, now is the time to give us a ring. 713-526-KPFT. 713-526-5738.
Have you ever looked at Looking Glass systems?
No, only through, never at. No.
Yeah, those are pretty cool. Like if you want to see like how some of the top layer of the internet is routed, you can go look at Looking Glass systems that are put on different parts of the internet, and it'll actually show you the routing and stuff.
Can this be access through the web, or is this a protocol that you have to go?
No, yeah, you can look at them on the web.
If I had internet access, I would go do that right now.
It's kind of cool because, it's at a layer that I had never really worked at. Not that I still work at that level, but I'm closer to that because I moved into networking, and so I'm
starting my world to ends at BGP.
I'm starting to do routing and switching and stuff, and so when you look at layer where you're doing ASN numbers and picking like where you have multiple paths and you're like waiting and all that stuff, like you can go through these Looking Glass systems and it'll actually show you what routes things will take for different paths, and it's kind of cool.
I'm going to use my phone hotspot to see if I can get some internet again. All right, well, it seems a little quiet here tonight. We had some good phone calls here this evening. We do appreciate that. Yep. Some good
I was going to jump in. The two-wire box, that was one of the large attack surfaces this year at DEF CON, was the Internet of Things, because there's no real antivirus to protect things like, you know, your smart TVs, your two-wire routers, things like that. A lot of them are running Linux now, and a lot of them are running versions of Linux that were put out 4 and 5 years ago, to which there are a lot of known exploits out for. So people are starting to get into these set-top boxes and into home routers and then other pieces of gear, and there's not much anyone can really do about it right now.
And once they get in, what do? Change your channel?
No. They I will make you watch Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants forevermore.
It will be nothing but the Dallas reboot for you.
They turn on your webcam and record what you're doing.
Yeah,
they catch you contemplating your navel.
Yeah,
post it to their Twitters.
Botnets mainly.
There were several femtocells wandering around, which kind of concerns me.
There were at least three.
Femtocell is a repeater for cellular connectivity that you can set up. And you can basically, when your phone is looking for a cell signal, it's going to jump on the first thing that it sees.
And it doesn't
discriminate.
Yeah.
So if somebody's running a cell that they have control over, they can look at all the data that's passing through it. So every time you send a password or account information over your cell phone through this tower, if they have a control over it.
So they've got like a T-Mobile femtocell, which is originally what it is like if you're inside of a building – or somewhere where you don't get good signal, like at your house or in a building, the companies will give or sell you a femtocell, which is basically a little...
Like basements of downtown buildings where you're never going to get reception down there. You've got to use those.
It's basically a cell tower, a little cell tower antenna that's just supposed to give local coverage so that you can still use cell for calls and data and stuff. But the thing is, last year at DEF CON, and I want to say it was a T-Mobile one, but I don't remember for sure, but somebody hacked one, and during the presentation, they're like, okay, here's our cell phone. This is its phone number. You know, we set it down, hacked a femtocell, and so that phone was going through the femtocell they had running.
Right.
And they just had a terminal screen up behind them, and it started just displaying all the text messages that were coming into that phone that were being delivered. So now this year, several people had hacked femtocells. They were walking around, and you know, in previous years, that was always kind of my, like, okay, well, I turn off Bluetooth, I turn off Wi-Fi, but I use my phone to continue checking my mail over 3G, 4G data.
Not anymore.
Which is what I did this year.
I was in airplane mode the majority of the con.
But now I'm a little bit concerned. I may have to go and change some. I mean, I didn't pass anything in the clear, I don't think. Everything should have been SSL connections for all of my email and stuff. But still, like...
I still like the idea. I want to connect directly to the tower.
Yeah.
Well, Groovehouse asked, you know, what are they going to do, change your channel? And if you have a lot of the smart TVs and that kind of stuff are going to have account information stored on the TV. So if they can get access to it, depending on how that device stores that data, they could get passwords.
You could steal your Go credentials and watch all of the Game of Thrones. That's the only way to do it now.
Yeah, so there's that. All right, so we got a call coming in. And we have a call going away. So the internet is up and down, which means Peter Hughes is here sometimes and then gone sometimes. But Groovehouse is getting a call screened and ready to go on the air. So if you want to be on the air, we do have time, 713-526-5738. All right, Groovehouse, I see you have a screen to call. Who do we have?
Up next, we're going to speak with Patrick.
Patrick, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, guys, how's it going?
Good. What can we do for you?
So I had a real quick question about just general router firmware, since you guys were discussing it earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So I personally have a Comcast router, and it doesn't cut out all the time. I've replaced it now twice, and I work with other Comcast routers in my job, and it seems to be a pretty common theme that, like, every couple months they reset, or you reset them and they function again, and that's a pretty common theme with both routers and modems, I've noticed.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't come up with a reason for why resetting it would make it function for such a long period. If it's failing, why isn't it failing constantly?
Well, there are a few different things that there's non-volatile memory. So you've got, like, NVRAM, and a lot of the routing tables, depending on what kind it is, a lot of times they'll write stuff to there, they'll take stuff out. And every once in a while, you know, after like 100,000 writes or, you know, however many it is, because you've got ARP information coming through, you've got all kinds of little things that the routers have to save, something will get off, or, you know, something will blow a memory allocation, or just something to where you need to hit that hard reset. When you do that, what that does is they've got a little piece of non-volatile memory, usually on the board, and it copies that non-volatile memory back over into the volatile memory part of it, and then you're more or less, it's like, you know, reinstalling Windows on top of itself kind of a situation. So who knows why? The issue is that they don't really update firmware all that much because, you know, wireless keeps getting faster and faster, and because, you know, routers keep getting faster and what have you. There's a lot of competition. Maybe people aren't spending as much time looking at the firmware stack. See, maybe the developers aren't spending as much time going through QA after it. And there's always, you know, especially when you get these new wireless standards out, there's always, you know, this feeling of, hey, let's get the hardware out there first. We know the software is not quite there yet, but we'll patch it. Sure, we'll patch it down the road. And that usually takes a little bit of time.
So aside from going, like, to a fully corporate level of infrastructure, what would you say is, like, your top tier consumer product?
For the routing stuff, here's what's kind of neat is there's been a big open source push. Inflicted has probably used some of this stuff more than I have. There's been a big open source push to where you can get like consumer grade hardware. Stuff like Linksys, and like when Linksys was, you know, kind of doing the Linksys / Cisco stuff that runs Linux out of the box, or has hardware that can run Linux on it. And then what you can do is you can say, hey, you know what, I'm going to take this firmware that maybe, you know, 5 or 10 developers worked on for 6 or 9 months and then left it alone, and I'm going to go get some firmware that 100 people have been working on in the open source community, and they're really behind it, and they're always improving it. And, you know, it's alive, it's being developed, and you can put that on there. And one of the options is like OpenWRT. I believe there's DDWRT. The common theme here is this WRT, because it's a model number of a very long running, like 8 or 9 years, you know, different incantations and different, I guess, incarnations of this.
Linksys.
Yeah. Yeah, this really cool little wireless platform. So I would maybe look at doing something like that. And with that, you get everything from like being able to run VPNs to being able to do like all kinds of cool stateful packet inspection to system notifications.
I haven't used it in years. I used it when it first, like a long time ago, when the very first WRT model existed. And it was like, it had, I remember, 8 meg of memory or something. Mm-hmm. And then they did a 16 one, and then they locked it down for a few years. And then they made a version that you had to pay more for that you could a flash, but I think now they open it all back up. But I haven't run it in years.
Yeah,
but it's one of those things where the original one you buy gives you consumer grade features, and that's all you have. But if you can flash it and install the WRT, either open or DD or whatever, you can install that. It gives you a lot of like enterprise level control, like routing, switching control that isn't part of the original software stack.
Yeah, I mean, you're looking at two different things here. The hardware is the hardware, and a lot of times this hardware is sold in a commodity fashion to where a lot of different manufacturers will use it. And the issue, just like you called in for, a lot of it's the firmware, and what you're doing is you're getting, you know, better firmware that's been looked at and worked on by more people by going down this route. The other two things to look at real quick, I would, you know, maybe Google Zero Shell.
Yeah.
Like a Zero shell, and then Monowall. And it's Monowall is spelled like MonoWall. And what these are two other Linux distributions that are like enterprise level, you know, home / enterprise level. Sounds kind of weird. Usually it's home, small office. But
yeah,
really big, awesome, robust firewall / router packages with some wireless capabilities that you can install on.
Monowall is designed to be booted off of a CD and be in memory.
Or compact flash, yeah. Yeah, so these are like, I would call them almost enterprise-level routers that you can get for really cheap. You know, even you get a little Alex box or a Socris box for $100 or so, and
you can
install
them on
there.
Regular.
Yeah, or put them on a regular
CPU
machine, too.
But like Monowall, if you boot it off of a CD or whatever, like you write your configuration to a CD, and then you boot it, and then it actually will do everything, keep it in memory. And then if you need to reset, you just reboot the machine, it pull it back off of the CD.
And all these ship with web interfaces to where you just have to log in and do everything through the web. You don't have to know anything command line necessarily. You know,
right.
Everything from like
that
really easy setup
better
wizards to where if you really want to get down into the details, you can do like quality of service tagging and VLANs and whatever you want to do. But, you know, I would check out those three for sure.
Sweet. Do you guys think it's really like a hardware non-issue at all? Like, what would be the difference between buying just general residential stuff versus buying like a Cisco ASA5510?
Cisco, you're paying for support, and the hardware is definitely better, but the question is, do you need, you know, giggy? Do you need 10 giggy ports and a home kind of gear? Do you need, it usually comes down to how fast the backplane is, how much RAM you have, how fast the processor is inside, and the level of components.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
Most people don't want to drop $3,000 for a home system, and there's no need to. Go spend, you know, a tenth of that for a DDWRT.
Unless you want to learn how to configure one because you're looking to get employed in that field.
And then you could go make enough money where you could afford those. But it looks like we got to go, Groovehouse says.
Yes.
Oh,
all right, well, appreciate your call.
Yeah, thanks for having me on air.
All right, have a good night. All right, well, you have been listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
checking his belly button.
I'm sure Peter also says good night. So, good night.
On Saturday, August 16th, make plans to see Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Dave Alvin and his brother, gifted vocalist Phil Alvin, at the historic Creighton Theater in downtown Conroe. Dave and Phil Alvin emerged to international fame in the early 80s as co-founders of the Blasters, an influential band that blended American roots and blues with searing punk energy to critical acclaim. Phil sang lead and played guitar. Dave played lead guitar and wrote many of the band's most popular songs, including Marie Marie and American Music. Now, for their first tour together in 3 decades, Dave and Phil Alvin are reuniting in celebration of their record Common Ground, a tribute to the music of Big Bill Brunzi. The show marks the final concert for this year's Sounds of Texas Music Series in downtown Conroe. Hometown favorite John Evans will open the show. Don't miss Dave and Phil Alvin on Saturday, August 16th at the Creighton Theater in downtown Conroe. For tickets and details, call 936-441-7469, extension 201, or visit thesoundsoftexasmusicseries.com. Presented by the Friends of Conroe, a Montgomery County nonprofit organization, and KPFT Houston.
You listen to KPFT, you enjoy some of our fine programming, and you have done your part to keep us commercial-free by calling in a pledge of support. Hats off to you for taking that first step. But before you settle into that fantastic feeling, don't forget, you still need to send in that pledge of support to finalize your promise to KPFT. But be warned, that fantastic feeling will soon follow. Thanks for supporting KPFT Houston.